room amid the egg-shaped incubation things. It was like being in some sinister art exhibit at the Zuckerberg Center or something, a strange maze of hovering eggs. I stared up at the ceiling and saw, far above me, between the aerogel wires that held the eggs, silver nozzles like showerheads. I wondered what they released. What was I doing? What was I doing? What was I doing? As I walked, I grappled under my invisiware to press the neuropads further into my skin. I pulled the facepiece down, became partially visible. Just my head floating in space. I quickly tried to make amends and cover it back up. I passed one of the technicians, a tall, skinny woman with a shaven head. She heard me, turned round, cold and curious eyes. I stood dead still, aware that a tiny piece of my forehead and full left eyebrow was visible. I stayed still and held my breath. She stared. I hoped her info lenses didn't have a zoom function. She shook her head, thinking it was nothing, then pressed some green command on the side of her egg. I am not made to be a spy. The far wall had lots of doors in it. Uncle Alex was probably behind one of them. He could have been watching me right then. Help me, I said in a quiet, I thought almost silent, voice to no one in particular. My voice triggered the Madara that was nearest to come to life inside her egg. Hello, did you need me for anything? This sound, in turn, triggered other Madaras to speak, each one offering the same strained smile. Hello, did you need me for anything? Hello, did you need me for anything? Hello, did you need me for anything? No, I tried to recover my face, realizing that the technicians working in the room would now be aware of the commotion. Hello, did you need me for anything? Hello, did you need me for anything? Are you getting hungry? Are you getting hungry? Are you getting hungry? Are you getting hungry? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. They were obviously not quite finished yet, and some rows didn't even have eyes fitted in their sockets. I began walking quickly across the light grey concrete floor, back towards the door. And that is when I saw it. That is when I saw the blood. Just a few drops, a near black constellation of them, and then a few more drops further along, and a few more. I followed them to where they led. Towards the far wall, the furthest from the exit, the last row of eggs. They were empty. In fact, both of the last two rows were empty eggs. But the blood was leading to the egg in the far corner at the end of the last row of empties. Only this one wasn't empty. There was an echo inside, her body strangely contorted. The egg had an illuminated notice on it. The notice said, Assessment mode 62. Do not touch. At first I thought it was another Madara. After all, the whole place was full of them. It was only when I got right up close that I realized that the hair color was too light. There, right in front of me, in this castle-run echo factory, was my parents' killer, Alyssa. I don't think I screamed. It was more of a gasp. But a gasp loud enough to be heard by her, because she turned towards me. She looked at me with absolutely no recognition. Then her eyes closed. Her body was broken and bloodied. Her face was caved in. Her head fell back against the transparent 3-meter-high egg she was in, causing it to wobble a little. It wasn't a replica, Alyssa. This wasn't another version. This was the one that I had driven into fast. The one I thought I had destroyed. I nearly fainted. Everything that was in me, that kept me upright and together and in one piece, kind of left for a second or two, and I tilted forward onto the egg, just where the notice was glowing blue. This set off an alarm, a loud siren that woke me up again and made me alert, and a loud robotic voice, Intruder alert, row 1, assessment pod under threat. Intruder alert, row 1, assessment pod under threat. Then, inevitably, I heard the technicians running through that vast room, past all those other large eggs. Intruder alert! intruder unseen, but thermo-detected. Straight after that announcement was made, I heard a noise above me, a kind of whooshing. I looked up, only to get soaked by a bright turquoise liquid. Inviziware antidote released, said the robotic voice. The Inviziware evaporated away, dissolving on impact with the turquoise liquid, and within a second it was just me, visible in my cling top and jeans, although those clothes now had turquoise stains all over them. During this moment, the Madaras had stopped talking, and one of the doors on the far wall had opened. I needed to get out of there. I looked around the room, at the neat rows of hanging clear eggs and the bodies inside them, and the walls which were watching, the way walls always did. I started running, but a secure droid had appeared out of nowhere in front of me. It was quite small and was really just metal legs and a face. But the face had guns for ears pointing at me, so when it said, "Stay right there," I obeyed. A group of people, Uncle Alex among them, came rushing over. Uncle pushed through the others, some of them technicians, two in now turquoise-stained suits, who were starting to look angry. One of the suited men wore all-white info-lenses, like posers wear, making him look like an alien. Another had a red mohawk. The neuropads were not doing anywhere near enough. "What is this?" Uncle Alex shouted. He looked at me. For a moment, his face showed total fury. The turquoise stains on his self-cleaned suit slowly shrank and disappeared, as they did on the clothes of everyone else in the room, all except mine. Well, my jeans self-cleaned, but my cling-top was old-school non-clean, and the stain stayed.
"What are you doing here?"
And then he rubbed his hand over his face, as if washing his anger away. A streak of turquoise spread across it like faded war paint. The turquoise was on his fingers now. He showed it to me.
"It's nothing high-tech, this, you know. Just simple paint blended with titanium oxide. That reacts with Inviziware, disables it completely. That is the criminal's uniform, of course."
Was that what I was to him? A criminal? Was I going to be punished like one? He looked first at me, then at Alyssa, her broken body splattered in blood, through the aerogel. He softened his tone.
"Audrey, why are you here?"
It's... Uncle Alex switched mood again and turned to the man with the mohawk, wearing a scruffy but evidently self-cleaned suit.
"Guillaume, why the hell is this on the main floor? Tell me."
"The only way we could keep her in this kind of condition was to put her in a rehab."
"Jesus, Jesus, what is it with you people?"
He closed his eyes tight and pressed the bridge of his nose with frustration. The phone call in the car hadn't been a fluke. There really was another side to Uncle Alex. He put his arm around me.
"Come on, Audrey, tell me. Why are you here? Why did you follow me?"
"You said I couldn't come, but I wanted to. I wanted to understand. I wanted to know more about echoes. I thought you didn't want me to come, so I thought... Uncle Alex tucked a loose strand of my hair behind my ear.
"Don't worry. You don't have to explain yourself to me. I'll take you home. I'm sorry you saw it."
I should probably have left it at that, but there was a question that just wouldn't let go, and I asked it when we were outside. "What was it doing there?" We walked over the damaged ground towards the levee board. "It's a Sempura." We rose up on the levee board, Uncle Alex shielding me from the weather. He responded when we were back in the car, totally sealed off from the wind. I stared at the warehouse, sitting under nightmarish clouds.
"We're a business," he said. "From the very beginning, we've studied our competitors' products. We're a better company than Sempura. We're a principled company. This isn't just a financial war. It's a moral war. We're winning on both counts, but I'm not so arrogant as to think I've cornered the market on every innovation."
This wasn't making sense. I was struggling just to keep up.
"And it's not just about successes. It's failures, too."
"Oh."
You can learn just as much from failure as you can from success. We study our competitors' failures in the hope that we can avoid such tragedies. And in this case, I really wanted to find out what had happened, for obvious reasons. I wanted to know the how and the why. I'm not saying we'll be able to find it, but if there's an answer, then the best place to look is Alyssa's circuitry. Right. I didn't want to tell you that I was doing this, and I told them to hide her well away, just in case someone who shouldn't have seen her ever saw her, which has obviously just happened in the most spectacular way. They are useless, the factory managers, the technicians. You see, all the brilliant minds work on the prototypes. There is one in particular, in a small warehouse in Valencia, who was an absolute genius. I wondered if this was the Spanish woman he had been shouting at. But then I thought it couldn't have been, as surely he wouldn't have treated someone he admired like that. I was going to ask, but I didn't want to remind him that I had witnessed that conversation. But echo factories, like this Paris one, they're just middle links in the chain. They just input data into computers, mainly.
But that wasn't a random copy, I said, as I saw the crumpled Castle Watch newsletter fly past the window and higher still into the sky. That was her. That was the same Alyssa I thought I had terminated.
He ordered the car to head back to London. We travelled fast this time. The greenhouses and floodlands and wind farms dissolved into the same blur.
Yes, it was. Because, as I have said, I want to know exactly what happened. Your dad was also my brother. I owe it to him, and to you, and to your mum, to make sure that nothing like this happens again. So I had people go to the house, to your old house, and drag her out of the water and bring her there.
But what about the police? What about the investigation?
Don't worry, the police have seen her. And listen, I wanted to get hold of that echo before Sampura got to her and started a cover-up. Anyway, don't worry about that.
He smiled a caring smile. I had expected him to be cross with me for following him, but he wasn't. This confused me.
Listen, he said. We have a chance here. A chance for your parents' deaths not to have been in vain. Information is a weapon, and I want to do everything to make sure we know exactly what happened. You understand?
We were nearly home. I looked at Uncle Alex and didn't really know who I was looking at. Was he bad or was he good? Or was he like most of humanity, hovering somewhere in between?
Yes, I said as the car stopped. I do.
Chapter 21. Hours later, Uncle Alex went into his pod for a meeting. I decided to take advantage of this and explore the house. I went downstairs. In the hallway, I walked past a hologram of a unicorn and into the grand lobby. Iago wasn't around, but echoes were. There was a female one I hadn't seen before. She was polishing an antique chest and looked at me with blank eyes. I walked on through the lobby, past more hollow sculptures and expensive furniture. There were a couple of echoes in the kitchen preparing food. I walked straight past and turned right into a dark, narrow corridor and began to feel a bit more nervous as I realized I was heading towards the Echo quarters. There was no one there. The first door I came to was locked. Like most of the doors in this house, it had an old-fashioned door handle you could turn and push, which I did. But then I felt a hand grip my arm.
"Stop," said a voice.
I turned and saw him. The blonde one, Daniel. He stared at me intensely, nothing like the stare of the one who had been polishing the old chest. It was then that I began to panic and pulled away from him.
"You shouldn't be here," he said. "It isn't safe. Does your uncle know?"
"No."
"What are you doing here?"
I don't know. But as I said it, I realized exactly what I was doing here and what I was looking for. I was looking for him.
He was the one who had tried to break into my room in the middle of the night, and I wanted to know why. But then he grabbed my arm again, tighter this time. It hurt, and he pulled me further along in the dark corridor. Now I was scared. He seemed stronger than Alyssa. If that hand was around my neck, it could have killed me in a second. Help! I screamed. Even though the moment you scream help, you sound and feel more like a victim. His hand was over my mouth. Shut up, he said. I ignored him and tried to scream again, but it was muffled now, just a blunt noise. We reached the last door in the corridor, and he turned the handle and opened it, pushed me inside, shut the door. It was a bare room, nothing but a wooden bed without a mattress and a sink and a small square window. Don't scream, he said. I am not going to hurt you, I promise. I had no idea if I should believe him. Why did you climb up to my window that first night I was here? Why?
I wanted to tell you something.
What?
I wanted to tell you about how I was made and who made me.
Why did you want to tell me that?
Because it would explain things. It would explain why I am not like the others. It would also explain about...
He hesitated mid-sentence. This was odd. I mean, Echoes never hesitated mid-sentence.
About why I feel guilty.
You can't feel guilty. You're a machine. His eyes did a good imitation of looking hurt. He started to talk quietly.
Do you think I am an automaton?
An automaton? What, like an android? Yes, you're an echo. Enhanced computerized humanoid organism. You can't feel guilt. You're tricking me. I want to go.
A machine without feelings. And can I bear to have my morsel of bread snatched from my lips and my drop of living water dashed from my cup?
He looked at me with anger in his eyes. It felt real, that anger. And then I realized that his words sounded familiar. That's from a book. He nodded.
It's from one of yours, Jane Eyre. Your books were brought down here before they were taken up to your room. Your uncle wanted to have all your stuff checked.
Checked? He never told me that. I had never had a conversation with an echo before. Sure, Alyssa had given me lessons and spoken to me a lot, but that had been different. That had been like interacting with a living computer. Everything had felt logical, but there was nothing logical about talking to Daniel. He frowned deeply, as if in pain. I had a strange urge to comfort him. I wanted to touch his arm and tell him it was okay. I didn't, of course, but the urge was there. And why were you reading my books? Who told you to do that?
No one told me to do that.
But why would an echo read a book unless someone had told them to? He took a deep breath.
I like reading. I enjoy it. It helps me escape. In my head, I mean.
But that makes no sense.
Not everything does.
His head turned sharply like an animal. I followed his eyes towards the door.
Someone's coming, he said.
I couldn't hear anything, but I vaguely knew that echo hearing was a lot more powerful than the human kind.
Listen,
he said, coming close to me and speaking in a hushed voice.
Alyssa was meant to kill you too. She was meant to kill your whole family, to make it clean. But it didn't happen like that. You survived.
He stopped a moment, listened.
They're 16 meters away, getting closer.
I heard it now too, footsteps.
You are in danger here, he said.
But how can I trust you? For all I know, you could be about to malfunction and kill me too. He shook his head, impatient, but there was a softness in his eyes that was almost human.
If I wanted you dead, you would be dead, wouldn't you? And trust me, there was never any malfunction. The only thing that didn't go according to plan was you. You were tougher than he thought.
Alyssa was female. I could feel his breath on me. It was warm. Of course it was. Echoes may have been artificial, but they were biological. They were given bones and blood and hearts and breath. Their brains may have had hardware in them. Their blood may have had different minerals in it. Their muscles may have been 10 times more efficient,
but they were still breathing bodies.
You have to go.
I thought he meant I had to get out of the room, but it was too late for that. The door opened. An Echo male stood there, staring at me with cold eyes. It was one of the ones that had been working in the kitchen. He was completely hairless, like most kitchen echoes.
What is occurring?
He asked. But Daniel was quick with the right excuse, and even adopted a cool and even Echo voice, quite different to the one he had used with me.
Hello, Thomas. The human girl had lost one of her books, and wondered if it was down here. Why would it have been down here? She knew Madara had collected her books, and she knew Madara was an Echo, so she headed to the Echo quarters.
Thomas stood there, looking at me with wide eyes. He didn't blink.
So why is she in your room and not Madara's?
I don't know my way around, I said quickly. I've never been in this bit of the house before.
What level of risk would you give this situation?
Thomas asked Daniel.
I would give it a zero. There is no risk. The human girl is Mr. Castle's niece.
Thomas nodded. Then to me he said,
I will escort you back to the human area.
I looked up, and Daniel gave me the smallest of nods, indicating that I should go with Thomas.
I hope you find your book, Daniel said to me, in roll, as I left the room. I hear page 206 is particularly good.
Thomas didn't hold my arm as we headed back to the human area, as he called it, but even so, I didn't feel any safer.
Enjoy your evening,
he said, with all the passion of a refrigerator. I walked back through the lobby alone, passing the Echo polishing the chest and seeing a couple more guarding the front door. For the first time, I felt like I was being kept not in a friendly house, but in a kind of prison. Page 206, I wondered. What does that mean? I had no idea. But as I climbed that old staircase, I began to realize that Daniel, the most mysterious Echo I had ever seen, held the key to everything.
Daniel, Mind Log 1. Remember. Chapter 1. The thing burning into my shoulder caused me a significant amount of pain. My arms were strapped tight. I was in some kind of a container. My body was in thick, clear liquid, right up to my neck. The liquid was rising slowly. It was now touching my chin. At first, this was a passive observation, and one made without knowing such words as liquid and chin. But slowly, there came an instinct. This is what I've discovered. Before thought, before knowledge, there is instinct. It is the root of everything. And the instinct I had was panic. Without understanding why, I felt I had to get out of there. I pulled desperately on the straps. I screamed. The scream was not a word. I did not scream, help. I would have if I'd known to do so, but I didn't. The scream was just noise. A desperate roar that gave me enough strength for my arms, then legs, to break free of their constraints. That is when I started banging on the side of the tank. I kept banging and screaming until I heard something that wasn't a bang or a scream. The sound was coming from outside. I think there was a sense of relief that there was an outside, and that the whole world wasn't confined to a tank full of ever-rising liquid. Something was opening the tank. Something, someone, whatever. Maybe the tank was opening it itself. But the key fact, the only important fact, was that the tank opened, and I fell a short distance onto hard ground. I was in a vast space. It was still an enclosed space, but it was many, many times larger than the tank. There was no liquid here either. Only what had arrived with me, which was now being absorbed into the floor. I looked back from where I'd come. The tank. A white oval attached to the ceiling and floor via a transparent cylinder. There were other tanks in the room. How many, I couldn't tell. All sealed. I got to my feet, looked down at my body. It looked neither strange nor familiar. It just was. A noise. Something getting nearer. Someone. It was a woman. I know that now, but I didn't know it then. She had long hair and wore white clothes. She was on her own. She came close to me. She knelt beside me. Her face was frowning. She said things, but I think she knew I couldn't understand them. She had something in her hand. It was small and grey and moving. If I'd ever seen a centipede, I might have thought it was one. Though, of course, it wasn't. It wasn't anything alive. She placed it between her thumb and finger and mimed putting it in her ear, and then pointed it at me, at my ear. I understood enough about this instruction to put it to my ear after she'd given it me. Within seconds it was moving in my head. I could feel it inside me. It wasn't painful. It wasn't even weird, because to find something weird, you have to have had experience of normality. But I didn't have experience of anything. Then I must have shut down. That thing inside my head had shut me down, because there was a gap, a time that I can't remember, a gap during which I was born. Chapter 2. When I woke up, everything was different. I understood things. I understood that I was lying on a bed, a futon, on a floor, and I knew that the floor was made from a cloth of ceramic fibres, and I also somehow knew that this particular type of material had been invented in 2067 and was widely used in home environments as a means of insulating against extremes of heat and cold. Seeing the baking sun outside, I realised which one. In this room, it was 39 degrees centigrade. On my skin, I felt the keratin from the preservation fluid that had covered me in the tank. I sat up. I looked around. I was somewhere else. I was in a house, a villa, in the desert. There was a photographic poster on the wall of a skyline and the words, New New York. New New York, human population 17,345,952, echo population 5,492,600. Also, there was a cross on the wall with a small sculpture of a dying man fastened to it. I had no knowledge about this man, except that he was made of pewter. The room's size was easy for me to measure. Indeed, it happened automatically. 6 by 4 meters. There was the distant sound of a man coughing. And there was the woman. She was standing above me and looking down. I understood that she was 38 years old and that she was free from unnatural genetic or surgical enhancements. Her face was handsome, which was a word normally used for men, but it fitted her more than beautiful. She was looking at me with confused eyes, her forehead continually creased. I calculated that there were 268,245 hairs on her head, most of them long and bleached by the sun and dishevelled. She was 168 centimetres tall and weighed 61 kilograms. Her skin condition suggested a depletion of collagen and melanin, indicating that, although she currently had no serious illnesses, she was seriously stressed and sleep-deprived. I would have guessed she only had about 2 hours sleep a night. She had a piece of circular jewellery piercing her eyebrow, made of platinum. She was wearing a locket around her neck. This was not platinum, but gold, though the chain itself was steel. A Spanish word was engraved on the locket. The word was siempre, which meant always or forever. She spoke to me. She said, Hola, me amo Rosella. This was Spanish, and not my default language. The one I'd been programmed to speak before all others was English, but I understood her instantly, just as I had understood the writing on the locket. Hello, my name is Rosella. Again, I didn't know how. Later, she would tell me that the bug-like thing that had got inside my head was called an igniter. It basically switched on my knowledge, the knowledge that had been programmed into me. I was programmed to know all kinds of things. I knew that I was on a water planet called Earth that travelled through space at 107,279 kilometres an hour. I knew that the universe we belonged to was a million, 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 million kilometres across. I knew the composition of the air and could tell, just by inhaling, how much was nitrogen and how much was oxygen. I could have written Welcome Home in Russian. I knew that I was an echo, and that an Echo's function was to serve humans without question. I also knew that I was a prototype. Prototypes were the only Echoes that needed igniters because they were the first of their kind. Assembly line Echoes were copies of what came before. If a company wanted to replicate an Echo, they could do it a million times without a single igniter. Rosella was smiling at me now. The smile was harder to translate than the words, especially as she seemed to be on the verge of tears.
"I tu te llamas Daniel."
I heard my name and found it weird that I knew so much and yet had to be told what my name was. She gave me clothes to wear. She told me I was in Spain. She told me about the government, about how she hated them. I knew that the West European government was based in an ever-moving Hydra bubble hovering high above Madrid, which sometimes travelled to Paris and Barcelona too. I knew they had been responsible for getting rid of most humans who worked in the civil service and replacing them with Echoes. In the police force and army, the replacements had mainly been robots, not Echoes. On the 14th of February of this year, 2115, these robots, Secura droids, had suppressed human rights campaigners in Seville who had been protesting against rising homelessness and deaths as a result of a policy of land clearance. She gave me some shoes to wear, too. She held a glass mirror in front of me. I saw myself. My face. It was the face of a male human boy. Or almost. Neat, light blonde hair, side-parted. 140,000 strands. Green eyes. My skin, though, was too smooth to belong to a human. It had no blemishes, no pores. I looked faultless, thanks to all that keratin. Rosella told me that I was the best she had ever designed. But she did not seem happy. When she spoke, I could tell there was tension inside her. Outside the room there was an open door leading to another room. There was a bed with an old man sleeping in it. He had a transparent mask over his face, and he wheezed and coughed in his sleep. "Where are we?"
"You are in my villa."
"Is it a good place?"
50 years ago, maybe. I hate it here."
"Why?"
"It is in the middle of a desert."
"A desert?"
"On a good day, it is 50 degrees centigrade out there. On a bad day, you might as well set foot in hell."
"Hell? What is hell?"
"Of course, I haven't programmed you to understand religion." I left that out. I had to leave something out. "Hell is a very hot place where people are punished for former sins. We are 50 kilometers outside Valencia, but no one lives here who doesn't have to live here. All the houses, all the villas you can see outside are free. Most are empty. No one officially lives here anymore. They haven't lived in them for decades. It's too hot. Everyone moved to the coast or the north, the Basque Country or Catalonia, or France or England. It is considered uninhabitable land here. The West European government doesn't want anyone living here. France has the weather we had decades ago. Sunshine, but not like this. We have these ancient air conditioning systems from the 2030s that I've restored and upgraded, but it's very unhealthy living here, especially for my granddad." She explained that her granddad was the man in the next room who was now coughing. His name was Ernesto Marquez. He was very old. He was 132. But I knew that the average male human lives to be 168 in 2115, the current year. His lungs are deteriorating, and the heat and the extra air conditioning aren't good for him. She paused for a while as she stared out at the scorched ground. "I hate this place."
"So why do you live here?"
Rosella laughed. It wasn't a happy laugh. "Because it is free."
She explained that although she was a celebrated Echo designer and AI expert, she had little money. She had been stuck in a contract with Castle Industries for over 10 years, and they paid her very little money.
"But that is going to change,"
she whispered, to herself as much as me. The place where she worked was Valencia, which she could only reach by old neglected land roads across the desert. I had been made there. And then I had another question. It was a simple question, the simplest in the world. What am I? I knew so much, but I didn't know that basic thing.
"You are an Echo."
she said in a heavily accented English. Why did you have to ask that? You know you are an echo. You have that knowledge. I know about echoes, but I know they don't feel fear, and I felt fear in the tank. Rosella's mouth became thinner and tighter. I knew that this was a sign of lying or concealing truth. There's something you're not telling me, I said. I should not feel fear. You are right. An echo doesn't feel fear. Not usually. She studied me for a while, 1 minute 48 seconds, in silence. Then she went out of the room. When she returned, she had a book. Images appeared on blank electronic paper. What do you see? She asked, each time a new silhouette formed. And so I told her. A butterfly. A tree. A hand. A bridge. She flicked to another blank page. This time it was a pattern. What does this make you think of? I looked at the black spiral in front of me. I answered honestly. Despair. She nodded, as if something had just been confirmed.
Audrey, Mind Log 428, Chapter 1. The day after my encounter with Daniel, I put in my info lenses and decided to watch some of my dad's old H-logs. They weren't about anything personal or to do with his life. They were just his thoughts on various technological developments. I hadn't bothered to watch many of them while he was alive, but now that he was dead, I wanted to see his face and hear his voice. I also wanted information. Uncle Alex was certainly right about that. Information was a weapon. So I went through lots of them, his holographic image appearing before me on the virtual retinal display as if he was in the room with me. I sat there before breakfast, listening to him talk about the perils of magnetic levitation, of terraforming Mars and Neptune, of echoes. It was the kind of stuff that would once have bored me to tears. He spoke of immersion pod addiction, of nano-starships, of shape-shifting technology, of self-clean upholstery, and, in his very last entry, of neuropads. Inevitably, I watched this one with the most interest of all.
By percating our minds, he said,
wincing quite a bit from pain. This must have been soon after the accident.
And by keeping us on a permanent, even keel, these long-proposed neuropads may keep sadness at bay, at least in the short term. But at what price? Unpublished research conducted by the firms involved in developing this technology confirms the risks. Neuropads, by slowing down and suppressing vital neuroadaptive processes, actually stop us feeling anything at all. We lose all fear, but also all curiosity. And a human who doesn't feel curiosity about the world stops being fully human, because curiosity about the world is what defines us. But of course, over the next few years, the last thing the big firms want us to do is be curious or worry about stuff, because that would lead to questions about the technology they are marketing to us. They want submissive minds. Of course they do. And do you know why?
He raised his eyebrows the way he always used to. Why, Dad? I said, trying to imagine that this was an actual conversation.
Money, that's why. Not just the money they'll make from selling neuropads, but also the money they'll keep making if they ever manage to stop us asking questions and thinking for ourselves. So please, if you have bought some of the first ones that have just appeared on the market, if you are wearing them right now, take them off. Even if it means feeling sadness and anxiety, take them off. It is better to be alive than in a waking sleep. It is better to remember than to forget. It is better to feel than to be numb. It is better to be a sad poem than a blank page. We are humans. I want us to stay that way.
Yes, Dad, I said. And he smiled, and I pretended the smile was for me, and then I switched the program to adaptive mode and asked him to hug me, and he did so, but I knew that I was hugging a ghost. I thought of what he had said, I thought of Grandma going mad on her Everglows. We are humans. It is better to feel than to be numb. To be numb was as good as being dead. I took off the neuropads and waited as I sat on the end of the bed. Sure enough, the sadness arrived. It was a terrible, strong sadness, but I wasn't afraid of it. In fact, in a weird way, I cherished it. The tears I cried were a measure of how much I had loved my parents, and it was useful to have that measure. It meant that even though I had lost them, I hadn't lost the love. So long as I went on feeling, then I would be connected to my parents through that love. It is better to be alive than in a waking sleep. Then, as my mind became clearer, I remembered something Daniel had said the day before and used the info lenses to find something out. I double-blinked them to life, then asked out loud, "Please could you tell me how long Sampura recommends you should keep an EMS, an echo monitoring system? Is it 250 days? Then bright castle blue text appeared, floating in the air. Sampura is the only technology company to produce an echo monitoring system. It recommends that their EMS is used for as long as the echo is in the house. Indeed, the longer the echo is there, the more useful the EMS becomes. Is an echo ever commanded by Sampura to throw the EMS away? No. I felt my skin prickle with fear or anger. It was difficult to tell which. Are echoes capable of lying? Only if they are programmed or reprogrammed to do so. Has any echo ever felt emotion? No. I stopped asking questions as I heard footsteps outside. Uncle Alex had brought me breakfast. Fruit salad, cinnamon toast, lychee water.
"Why aren't you wearing the pads?" he asked.
"I'd rather be sad than blank." He smiled a little. I felt like he wanted to tell me something. Yeah, or ask me something. I assumed it was about yesterday and Alyssa. But no.
"What were you doing in the Echo Quarters yesterday?"
I was just... I'd lost a book. How did you know I was there?
The walls have eyes, he said, laughing.
And then he left me alone. Chapter 2. I had a bath. It was a thermo bath, so the water never cooled and stayed clean. I put it on salt water setting to start, then pure. I must have lain there for ages, thinking that if my parents hadn't been killed, I'd have been with them right now. It was a Saturday. Maybe in another universe I was having that Saturday. The hardest bit about losing people you loved wasn't thinking about the memories you had, the ones that had already been made. No, the hardest bit was the stuff that should have been, but had now been denied. The stuff Alyssa had stolen. I spent the day in my room. I had no intention of leaving it. What would be the point after what Uncle Alex had said? The walls have eyes. I cried. I stared out of the window at London and that rotating castle sphere. I thought of those animals that should have been extinct in their enclosures. I felt like one of them. A marooned seal out of place and out of time. I went into the immersion pod. I accessed simulations of the most beautiful locations. I walked on hot sand as waves lapped my feet. I stood outside the pyramids, the Grand Canyon, and the floating tower of Beijing. None of it helped. The only cure for reality was reality itself. I left the pod and lay on my bed. It was raining heavily. I tried to read, but my vision blurred with tears. There were noises outside on the driveway. I went to look. I saw the Echo Boy, Daniel. He was outside on the driveway doing press-ups in the rain, while Iago stood over him, laughing and shouting numbers.
268, 269, 270, 271... Don't even think about stopping, computer brain, or you know what will happen. Yes, You know what my dad said to you last night. That's right. 275, 276, 277.
I watched Iago. I saw a little piece of spit leave his mouth. Suddenly, staring at this puny and rather unpleasant 10-year-old, I realized why Uncle Alex wanted to populate the world with echoes. It was a kind of correction. He'd created a flesh-and-blood child whose behavior was unpredictable, rebellious, and borderline evil. So it was easy to see why he was motivated to create what he hoped would be perfect and obedient beings. No. No, Uncle Alex probably didn't feel that way about his own son. In fact, he had probably told him to be out there. This was probably Daniel's punishment for having spoken to me. Guilt flooded through me. It was weird. I was sympathizing with an echo. I remembered his warm breath on my face the day before. I remembered how I'd wanted to touch his arm, to comfort him. Weird, I said aloud. I think I was talking about my own feelings. Feelings that were rising up inside me. Daniel seemed to be struggling, but I knew that this was just a clever illusion, as echoes couldn't feel pain. So actually, maybe this wasn't Uncle Alex's idea. Maybe. I must have stood there for half an hour, watching him do over 1,000 press-ups, while Iago, who probably wouldn't have been able to do 5, shouted at him. Indeed, I think Daniel might have been able to do even more if he hadn't noticed me watching right at the end. After that, he collapsed onto the gravel, exhausted, staring up at the window. I stepped back towards my bed. It frightened me that these machines, and that is all an echo was, a machine, were now being made to be so much stronger than humans. And this Daniel must have been one of the strongest yet. But he was submissive, too. Uncle Alex had stopped him getting close to me, even though Daniel could have easily overpowered him. Unless he malfunctions completely. I thought of that desperate, fast battle I'd had with Alyssa, and how I had managed to escape out of the window just in time. If the same thing happened again, I doubted I would be so lucky. Outside my room, in the hallway, I heard Uncle Alex walking past and shouting to someone,
"I want the prototypes ready in 2 weeks. I know that's tight, but after what you've done, I think it's fair, don't you?"
I had no idea who he was talking to, but he sounded angry. There was a ferocity to him that he hid from me. I wondered what else he was hiding. Chapter 3. Later, it happened. Something I think Uncle Alex had been building up to. He came into my room. He had a woman with him. A human woman, if we're being generous. She was short, with dark, mid-length hair, and was wearing a flannel trouser suit and a bright red mind wire. I could see from the tiny illuminations in her eyes that she had her info lenses not only in, but active. Her face had been artificially lightened with Perma cosmetics, and her lips were an unnaturally bright red. Her name was Candressa. She was the public relations person for Carthel Industries. She told me that there was to be a media conference about my parents' deaths. She thought that if I wanted justice, then I should attend. "Justice?" I asked. I was confused. How could there be justice? My parents were dead.
"Yes," said Candressa. "Sampura can't get away with this. They have to be made to pay for what they have done. It is a danger to society if they allow such products onto the market. Lena Sampura herself should be held accountable. Do you understand?"
"Echoes? You want to stop echoes?" Candressa's mouth became small and tense.
"We want to stop Sampura and their dangerous strategy of putting untested products out there."
I must have looked hesitant, because Uncle Alex sat down next to me and put his hand on my arm.
"You wouldn't have to leave the room. You could do it all from the immersion pod."
He was trying to look calm and soothing, but there was something desperate about the way he was looking at me.
"If you do this, you could save people's lives."
I thought of Dad and Mum's blood leaking onto the floor. When? I said. Candressa looked at Uncle Alex, who gave her a small nod.
You could do it right now, she said.
They are waiting to hear from you, said Uncle Alex.
But you didn't say it would be so soon.
Uncle Alex gave more of his soothing smile.
I didn't want to cause you any extra distress.
Something wasn't right here, but I couldn't decide what it was. All I knew was that my parents had been killed by an echo they had bought from Sempura, and a world with fewer Alyssas in it was a safer world.
You won't have to face them, Uncle Alex explained. We can put the pod on blind mode. All that will happen is that you'll be asked a few questions, and then you tell them what you know, and that will be that.
Candressa looked at me.
It is ready now, but I'm not prepared. You just have to act sad about your parents and say how terrible you think Sempura are for letting that product onto the market. That is the only message you need to have.
I didn't feel up to it. I looked at Uncle, and in a moment of weakness I said,
Maybe I should have a calmer mind to get me through it.
I looked over at the neuropads. Uncle shook his head.
No, he said, that wouldn't be a good idea.
Candressa looked at me coldly.
We need them to see your pain.
So I did it right then. It was all set up. I think they wanted it this way. They left the room and went to watch from pods elsewhere in the house. I went into my pod. But the moment the helmet lowered, I saw a familiar bookcase. Blind mode, I thought. But it didn't happen, so I said it out loud. Blind mode, blind mode, blind mode. But this was not a media conference. This was something else entirely. I realized what I was looking at. I was at home, staring straight into Dad's office. Chapter 4. It was achingly familiar. The bookshelves and the view of the rain and the magrail through the window. The sealed-up pod beside the desk. Not just looking at it either. I was as good as there, at home. And there was my dad, too, at his desk, next to the vintage computer, reading a book called Darwin's Nightmare. For a moment I didn't think. I just stood there, mesmerized. There he was, Dad, as real as he had ever been, sipping tea, unshaven, scruffy-shirted, tired. Dad? Can you hear me? Of course he couldn't, but he heard something. He looked over at the doorway. I did too. It was Alyssa. She was standing there, with her blonde hair and her smiling face, one hand behind her back.
Hello, Alyssa,
Dad said, looking confused. Hello, Master.
Dad, get out of here! Get out!
I screamed as loud as I could. But the scream couldn't reach Yorkshire, let alone the past. No matter how hard you screamed, you could never reach the ears of the dead.
Why are you here, Alyssa? I didn't ask for you to be here. Please get out of the room. I'm working.
I cannot process that command, Master.
My dad's confusion quickly became anger, the anger he often felt towards advanced technology.
What do you mean?
Alyssa kept smiling as she walked towards Dad's desk. Dad stood up.
Alyssa, stay back.
I cannot process that command, Master.
Dad, I cried as tears streamed down my face.
Get away! She's going to kill you! There's a knife behind her back! Get away!
Dad was starting to look worried, but nowhere near as worried as he should have been.
What is that you are holding, Alyssa?
And then he saw it, and Dad being Dad, his first instinct wasn't to save himself, but to save us. He called for my mum.
Lorna! Lorna! Audrey! Lorna, get Audrey! Both of you, get out of here! Alyssa is malfunctioning!
He was backed into a corner. He tried to push past her, but she pressed the blade into his stomach.
Dad!
I wept, helpless.
I love you! I love you! I love you! And then she cut his throat, and blood flowed out of him like a river, and the colour drained from him, and he went weak, and I screamed, "Stop this! Stop showing me this! Stop playing the recording! Let me out of the pod!" But nothing happened. I was still there, in our old house, looking at my dad as blood and life leaked out of him, and he kind of stagger-collapsed towards the floor. I left the room to see my mum running along the landing, looking frantic. Instinctively, I raised my hands. "No, Mum, don't go in there. You'll die if you go in there." She didn't hear me, of course. She just passed right through me. "Mum! Mum!" I closed my eyes, but I couldn't close my ears. She screamed first from the sight of Dad, then from her own pain. "Get me out of here! Get me out! Get me out!" But it didn't happen. I stayed there on that landing. I could feel its cold floor beneath my feet. 5 minutes later, I heard someone else. The ultimate stranger. Myself. "Mum? Dad?" My voice from downstairs. My old voice. The one that didn't sound like the end of the world had just happened. Of course, I had just finished my class in the pod. There was no answer from my parents. I remembered what I had been thinking, that Dad would be in his pod, writing his book. But I'd wondered why Mum hadn't answered. I counted the seconds, wondering how long it had been from the time of doubt to the time of terror. 1, 2, 3. I had gone into the kitchen. I remembered that. And then I had stepped onto the old creaking levee board through the hole in the ceiling to the next floor. I watched myself in my low-tech cotton smock and jeans. I hated the sight of me. I felt like I was looking at an arrogant traitor. "You stupid idiot," I told my other self. 10 minutes! Your lesson was over 10 minutes ago! Why did you stay around and chat? You should have just got out and gone to Mum like you wanted, instead of listening to Tola go on about gladiators and boyfriends. But of course, 3 days ago, I hadn't heard this voice of my future self. "Mum," I had said, innocent, "are you there?" And then that noise that I hadn't been able to recognise 3 days ago, the one I thought might have been a magcar flying by on the rails outside, but was actually my mum's last dying breath. I watched myself head towards Dad's office. 11, 12, 13. As my recorded self reached the doorway, I noticed something I hadn't seen 3 days ago. Blood was actually leaking out onto the landing. It must have been my dad's, as he was closest to the door. "Dad?" I watched the pain slowly set in my face as it looked inside the office, seeing my dad first. "Dad, what's the matter? Why aren't you?" Then seeing everything. Dad, Mum, Alyssa, the knife, the blood that wasn't able to be absorbed into the self-clean carpet. The only carpeted room in the house.
"I like softness under my feet. It's my only indulgence."
My face rigid with shock as it too struggled to absorb. And, of course, her voice. Alyssa's, as she stood there with the blood-stained knife. "I was waiting for you to come. I was waiting for you to come. I was waiting for you to come." Only now it seemed less like a malfunction and more like single-minded determination. And myself, my 3 day-ago self, just standing there until she moved. And then I moved, and as I watched, I realized how fast I'd been, far faster than I knew I could be, as I ran that short distance along the landing towards the window. Then my voice, loud and hard and clear, as I commanded that window to open. The window's slow response, giving Alyssa time to grab the sleeve of my cotton top. And then I witnessed my fury, as my other self pulled away from her and slammed an elbow hard into her face. The window opened. I jumped out, and Alyssa followed. But before she did so, I noticed something else I obviously hadn't seen before. She looked inside the office, as if wondering whether to stay with the corpses of my parents. She spoke into the air. "Rosella?" Anyway, I was pretty sure that was what she said. "Rosella? Who the hell is Rosella?" I asked, screaming it. Tell me! Tell me! But then she jumped out, and I heard that splash, and I, the actual real present me, ran across the landing to see my head burst out of the water and scream up towards the levee board that was just outside the car. Down! Down! The levee board descended. I watched myself climb onto it. Who is Rosella? I wailed. The window closed again. I watched the car reverse 5 meters to the end of the rail, and I watched as Alyssa stood dripping wet in front of the car. She knew what was going to happen. She knew she was going to be terminated. She didn't care. Why didn't she care? Echoes were programmed to preserve their own existence. But then, echoes were also programmed never to harm their masters. She was breaking all the rules. The window was level with the rail, which meant that I could watch it all quite easily. The car moving forward with me inside, a blur of speed, so fast that Alyssa just disappeared. She was there, and then there was the fastest flowering of blood, some drops even making it to the window. Her crumpled body fell into the water below, and the car was away, I was away, heading south fast. I, the actual present me, who knew she was still inside this footage, turned to look at my parents, and then I walked towards them, towards these bodies that had once hugged me, and held my hand, and rocked me to sleep as a baby. They would never have let an echo do that. And taught me to swim in a swimming pool in Paris, and to hold my breath underwater. The way to do it is to try not to think about anything. The way to do it is not to try too hard. Just imagine you are nothing, just another natural element in the pool. My dad's eyes were open, as if staring up at me. Eyes that were his, but not really his, all at once. The way a house stops belonging to someone after they stop living there. I'm sorry, Dad. I'm so sorry I couldn't stop this. And I cried helplessly, and collapsed on top of him and my mum, and hugged them, and felt their blood on me. I wailed and I wailed until their bodies dissolved from under me, along with the floor, and I screamed and found myself falling and falling through blackness, a blackness only punctured by occasional bright objects that passed before me. The Darwin's Nightmare book, the kitchen knife, the ancient computer. But then there was nothing at all except the dark and the fast sensation of descent, until eventually I landed in a chair in a bright wooden room. Chapter 5. A crowd of strange beings sitting on large leather chairs were staring at me. Most looked human, but some didn't. Some had blank avatars, just blue humanoids with those scary featureless faces, all identical. Even more surreal was the fact that a few of the avatars were the kind idiots from school use on social media. I saw a strange albino alien with 3 red eyes glistening in the artificial light. I saw an old robot from the 2060s. I saw a Minotaur. "Where am I?" I asked, sobbing. Someone touched my arm. I turned and saw Uncle Alex.
"It's okay, Audrey. You are still in the pod. I'm in my pod in the office. This is the virtual media conference. There are journalists here who want to ask you a few questions."
"Journalists?"
Uncle Alex poured a sigh into the silence.
"Yes. Don't be fooled by their avies. They often have eccentric avatars. The media circus really is a circus these days. I suppose they think you're more likely to be yourself around them. Who knows?"
"My parents died, and they are pretending to be aliens."
"It's nothing personal. They're just overgrown school kids."
"We're not allowed fictional avatars at school, only on social media."
"Well, your dad used to have one."
"Did he?"
Uncle Alex smiled. Maybe he was pleased that I didn't know this about Dad.
"Oh, yeah. He sometimes used to come to conferences like this to ask his brother some questions, but never as himself. He'd always be a gorilla."
"A gorilla?"
"Yep, a big silverback gorilla."
"Why?"
"It's a long story."
I could swear a trace of bitterness crept into his voice.
You might get to hear it one day. But anyway, the main thing is that you shouldn't worry about what these journalists are trying to be. Just be you.
I saw Candressa. She was sitting on my other side, her face white and sharp and angular, as though someone had chipped it out of limestone. But at least she was recognisably herself. Her bright red lips were telling me, in a whisper, "Your parents must not have died in vain. Sempura must pay. Answer the questions as honestly as you can." I was staring out at all the faces, actual or uber-fictional representations of the real people who were sitting in their pods around the country or around the world.
"What happened then?" I asked Uncle Alex. "Why was I back in Yorkshire? Why did I..."
And then the questions started. They came from different people within the room. It felt like the room itself was asking questions as it closed in around me. I went on crying, in the real world and the fake one. Candressa pointed at someone, the Minotaur. A man's body in a smart 20th century suit, with a bull's head.
"You, your question."
"Hello,"
said the Minotaur, its bullish mouth doing the talking. It was so surreal that I wanted to laugh and scream with terror at the same time.
"Yes, I'm Tao Hu from Echo World Holozine. I just wondered, how long had your parents owned Alyssa?"
I don't know. 4, 5 weeks?
Then another journalist, another question. This time the avatar was of an actual human, a woman with dark hair sitting at the front, who kept flickering because of a bad line.
"Tina Murray's assistant editor, Robotics Week. I was just wondering, why did they decide to buy her? Why did they not get a robot, if your father was so anti-eco-technology?"
Well, my dad was in a car accident, and that slowed him down. And Mum thought it would be better for my education if I was taught not just by virtual teachers, but also by echoes. She'd seen lots of research, and it was my fault. Dad asked me if we should get an echo, and I said that I thought we should."
Candressa was very eagerly pointing to someone else, someone whose question she obviously wanted.